30 is not the new 20. Popular culture likes to dump on 20-somethings for being entitled, narcissistic, just looking to extend adolescence for as long as possible before the realities of adulthood set in. But clinical psychologist Dr. Meg Jay sees beyond the social media posts. About 10 years ago, she did a TED Talk with 11 million views and also a book explaining why our 20s are the most uncertain period in our lives, but how they can set us up for the life we want to live. She has revised her popular book for 2021. It's called The Defining Decade, Why Your 20s Matter and How to Make the Most of Them Now. And Dr. Meg Jay joins me now. Hello there.
Hey, Jesse. How are you?
I'm great. Why did you decide the book needed an update?
Well, you know, the times, they keep on changing, right? I wrote the book. The first edition came out in 2012, I believe. And so here we are almost 10 years later. And there were new things I wanted to say, especially around social media, which has changed a lot in the last 10 years. And I've been listening to my clients and my readers and hearing from them about new things that they wanted, including there's a reader's guide in the back now so that readers can ask themselves questions that I ask my clients or that book clubs can use. And I just felt like I wanted readers to have the newest and best information. So now they do.
What was your aha moment when you knew that 30 is not the new 20?
Great question. There were probably several, but one I talk about in the TED Talk and that I talk about in my book was actually when I was in graduate school and I was working with my first client, actually, who was a 20-something, and she was dating around and not doing such a great job at it, wasn't very happy with who she was dating. And I just kind of nodded my head and shrugged my shoulders because it just didn't seem that important to me. I mean, she was only in her 20s, right? Like, she wasn't looking to get married tomorrow. So I just really didn't see how what her 20-something choices, I didn't see how much they mattered. And actually, my supervisor at the time said, you know, the best time to work on someone's marriage is before they have one. And so the book isn't about marriage, but it's about how our 20s are this amazing time to get in front of all these big changes and big choices that are right around the corner. So what we're going to do for work, where we're going to live, how or whether we're going to partner, whether we're going to have kids in the picture, and that, you know, these things are happening later than they used to, which actually creates an amazing opportunity in our 20s to get in front of them and think about them ahead of time and try out different things before we make these, you know, perhaps lifelong commitments.
What do people mean when they say that 30 is the new 20, and what's wrong with that sort of thinking?
Yeah, so what that comes from is the notion, and this is correct, empirically true, that these days adult milestones, I say that in quotation, so, you know, figuring out work, finding a partner, buying a house, having a baby, these things happen closer to 30 now than to 20. So 50 years ago, believe it or not, your average 20-something or average 21-year-old, at least in the U.S., they already had these things. It's kind of hard to imagine, but it was true 50 years ago. These days, these adult milestones are happening more around 30 than they are around 20. So in a way, 30 is the new 20. But I think what's happened in popular culture is that's led people to believe that what they do in their 20s doesn't matter anymore because it's all happening later, right? That's what I said I thought when I started seeing clients myself until I realized that there's a real developmental sweet spot in your 20s that doesn't occur in your 30s. And that's that sweet spot of getting in front of these big choices where you can really get out there and explore jobs and relationships and locations and figure out who you are and just make the most of this developmental moment and see it as a sweet spot and not a developmental downtime.
Our listeners will be familiar with the phrase the midlife crisis, and we used to think of the red sports car, but how do you view the midlife crisis as experienced by the post-millennials?
Yeah, so right, the old midlife crisis used to be, gosh, I settled down too young, I didn't know what I was doing. You know, now in my 40s and 50s, I regret the choices that I made. Kind of the new midlife crisis is a little bit different. If you're going to have one, it tends to be, gosh, I wish I'd gotten started on some things sooner, that I'm into my 40s and I'm realizing people who dug in a little bit in their career in their 20s or got in front of these big decisions like finding a partner or figuring out who I am, that they really like where they are in their 30s and 40s and beyond. And so the defining decade is really about setting people up to feel good about their lives, not just in their 20s, but also in their 30s and 40s and 50s and beyond, because it can be hard to imagine. But you know how happy we want to be in our 20s? We're going to want to be that happy in our 30s and our 40s as well. And so it's kind of about how to make that happen and how to sort of start to think ahead about what it is you might want down the line.
Yeah, that'll make sense. What is the wrong way of doing your 20s then?
Well, you know, I hate to say there's one wrong way, but I will tell you, I listen to people for a living. So, and I heard from lots of people over the years who's listened to the TED Talk or read The Defining Decade. And many people have said, wow, I really wish I had had your book when I was in my 20s. I really wish I'd seen your TED Talk was in my 20s. That, you know, people say that they feel like they didn't get started. They didn't take themselves seriously. They didn't take their lives seriously, that they felt like they'd been a bit trivialized by popular culture and sort of led to believe that what they were doing didn't matter. But then they start to hit 30 and beyond and realize those choices or those lack of choices were kind of coming back on them in ways that didn't feel so good.
So too much fun and acting on this myth that's really what all the 20s are all about.
Well, actually, so no, that's part of the popular culture myth too, is, well, first of all, I'm not against fun. I like fun at, you know, any age, but actually what most people will tell you is that when they're feeling lost in their 20s and they don't get any traction in work or love or with themselves, they're not having fun. It's actually kind of a miserable feeling. And so actually the happiest 20-somethings, you know, of course they find time for fun on the weekends or at night or whatever the case may be, but actually 20-somethings who find jobs that they start to feel good about, they see a way forward for themselves as 20-somethings and 30-somethings and beyond, they actually tend to be happier than the ones who, quote, we imagine are sort of out there having fun all the time. That actually doesn't turn out to be a lot of fun because, well, most people frankly can't afford that. But also, you know, people end up feeling sort of pretty lost and aimless pretty quickly.
It's part of the problem that we don't recognize the events that occur in our 20s as being as consequential as they end up being.
Yes. Yeah, so you're referring to, I love it. You've really done your homework, which makes interviews so much more fun. So thank you for that. And you're referring to a study I talk about in The Defining Decade, which is, it shows that they looked at the life stories of successful people. And what they found was that about 75% of life's most defining moments, so our biggest choices, our biggest decisions, our biggest moves, take place by around 35. So that was finding number one, which means, hey, all those years in our 20s and early 30s are really important. Really important things are happening. But the other cool thing about the study is that the people said that at the time they didn't realize how consequential those choices and decisions and those moves really were. So what that means is that even if your 20s don't feel that important, they actually are really important, that what you're doing or not doing is going to have consequences for you down the line. It also means that, I think contrary to what we imagine, you know, the things that we want in life don't come from these huge aha moments necessarily, or these consequential encounters. They often are from this, hey, this first job I got, or this conversation I had with someone who led to something else, or this roommate that I met who introduced me to a new way of thinking about my own career, that it's these little moves in your 20s that end up having a big impact on your life well beyond your 20s.
I'm speaking to Dr. Meg Jay. She is author of a book called The Defining Decade, Why Your 20s Matter and How to Make the Most of Them Now. Is it important what's happening in your brain when you're a 20-something, developmentally?
Yeah, so many people might have heard by now. So the brain goes through two big growth spurts in life. The first is in the first, 5 years of life. The second is that what we hear is an adolescent growth spurt that happens in your teen years, but also lasts into about the mid-20s. So some people hear this and they think, oh, 20 somethings, they're not real adults. They can't really be responsible for making decisions or getting out there in the world and getting going. But actually, there's a very different way to look at that. What that means is that because your brain is going through this big growth spurt, it's currently wiring itself up for adulthood. And the brain wires itself up through experience. So one way to wire up your brain in the way that you want it to be for adulthood is to go out there and put yourself into those adult roles. That's how we learn to, have more mature relationships, to show up for work every day and go for what we want in the office or in our personal life, that our brain is actually creating our adult self in our early 20s and beyond. And so the brain development doesn't mean that 20-somethings aren't capable. It actually means that this is the best chance that probably you'll ever have to change who you are and how you think and how you operate and what your habits are. So it's actually a great time to work with people as a clinical psychologist. 20-somethings can change a lot in a really short period of time, which makes them quite rewarding as clients.
The book is obviously primarily for people in their 20s. However, I think there's plenty in there for other people too, like maybe managers of people in their 20s. When you give a 20-something criticism at work, how does their brain react, maybe differently to how ours might or how we might expect?
Yeah, so part of the brain still wiring up in your 20s is that kind of the emotional brain that in all of us is kind of the more primitive animalistic brain. That's good to go from the time that we're born, that reactive emotional brain. Babies are really good at crying right from the get-go. And so that part of our brain is well in operation, from our youngest years and certainly into our 20s. But the frontal lobe, which is the part of the brain that kind of slows down that emotional brain, stops and takes perspective, thinks ahead as well as in the moment, that part of the brain is still wiring up. And it's also has less experience kind of dealing with scenarios like you talked about. So it's very common for 20-somethings who have those first jobs. They get that criticism at the office, or a boss who doesn't know how to handle his or her employees so well snaps at them or yells at them, and that can feel like the end of the world. I'm going to be fired. I'm a failure. I'm never going to make it, because the brain is still operating more emotionally than it is rationally. But as we get older, not just because our brain matures, but because we've had these experiences more than once, we realize just because something goes wrong at work doesn't mean I'm going to be fired. Or if I lose this job, it doesn't mean there's not going to be another one. Or if this relationship works out, it doesn't mean that it's not actually for the best. And so the 20s can be a very emotional time. It can be a very volatile time.
I love this term that you've come up with, by the way. You say that this generation is prone to present bias. Can you tell us what that is and how that manifests in their decision making?
Yeah, so I wish I'd come up with the term present bias, but I didn't. I'm just educating people about it. And that's really one thing I'm trying to do in the defining decade, is just to educate 20-somethings, give them the best information that they can have to understand what they're going through and to figure out how to move forward. So present bias is something that all humans grapple with, and that's just the tendency to be more interested in and more compelled by the now rather than the later. So, it doesn't matter if you're in your 20s or not, you might be thinking, oh, I'll have the chocolate cake today and I'll hit the gym tomorrow, or I'll buy the jeans today and I'll pay my credit card off next month. That's, a pretty common human problem. It's especially true for 20-somethings because of, like we just talked about, the frontal lobe is still developing, and that is part of the brain where we learn to think sort of further out rather than just what our emotions want at the time. It's also true if you think about what it's like to be a 20-something, for most of them, they've come up through high school and college, if they go to college, thinking in semester-sized chunks. So decisions are made for 17 weeks, and then you get to make them again, pick some more classes, or think about 3 months at a time, and then you get to sort of, you know, wipe the slate and go again. So to start to think not just about the present, but about the future in 5 or 10 year periods of time, that's a real cognitive shift for 20 somethings. And I mean, I'm certainly not saying they're not capable of it as much as I'm saying it's a new way to think about putting their lives together. And, you know, that can take a little bit of practice.
Okay, so present bias isn't your term. What about identity capital? I'm pretty sure you came up with that one.
No, I did not, Jesse. You're, I'm telling you.
Just take it as New Zealand. No one will know.
Yes. Okay. Well, you know, these days I'd be found out, yeah, right? I'll tell you what I came up with, the defining decade. That's mine. But for most of what's in the book, I'm really just educating people. I mean, I've been working with 20-somethings for 20 years, teaching them. And a lot of what I was learning about adult development, not just through my work, but also through the research, I felt like 20-somethings themselves need to know this. So yes, identity capital is such a great term. I wish I'd come up with it, but it's really about a great way to think about what am I trying to do in my 20s, especially with work. So a lot of people have heard of like an identity crisis model where they imagine, oh, I'm supposed to sort of wander around in crisis and, you know, maybe have this lightning bolt of intuition and suddenly know who I am and what I'm supposed to do. It never goes that way. I'm telling you, I've been working with 20-somethings for 20 years. Never happens like that. Rather, what I encourage 20-somethings to do is just to think about getting out there and finding pieces or earning pieces of what's called identity capital. So you take a job that you feel like, I have something to learn here. This is going to add value to who I am. There are some skills to be gained. There's a degree that might help me. You get that piece of identity capital, and then you figure out, okay, what's the next piece of identity capital that makes sense? And so you just move through your 20s, trying to accumulate different pieces of identity capital that make sense to you. And over time, those build and lead to sort of better and better pieces. And then over time, you kind of have a real identity there, not just pieces of identity capital. But I think it's a helpful way for people to think about, how do I get started? A lot of clients or readers reach out to me and they say, what should I even be thinking about for a first job? How can I know what I want to do forever? And I say, well, you can't, you don't. But just go out and get one good piece of identity capital. That'll help you get the next one. And what you learn getting that first one will teach you what's the next one that I think I need or that I think I want.
And not to share all the secrets of your book, but the other one I wanted to ask you about is this this advice, encouragement for people in their 20s to lean on what you call the strength of weak ties. What does that mean?
Yes. Yeah. So this is another great one. And, you know, you're hitting on such important ones. I put identity capital and weak ties right at the beginning of the book because I know my audience. And I felt like if people didn't read further than 30 pages, I wanted them to get at least this, that these are two of the best concepts to understand. So weak ties, or the strength of weak ties, is about how it's the people that we don't know well who often turn out to be the most valuable to us in our 20s and beyond. So weak ties are everybody we've ever met, but we're not currently close with. So it's our old roommate's cousin, or the neighbor we used to know growing up, or the friend we lost touch with who now lives on the other side of the country, or the person that we sat next to in chemistry class. And, you know, we see them on social media, but we're not closely connected. So what's so great, or what's so valuable about weak ties, is that because they're outside of our kind of tight network, they know things and they know people that we don't know. So these are the people who are going to be the source of new information about jobs or new apartments or new people to date, or just new ways of thinking that might be useful to us. So it's very common for 20-somethings to kind of gather together with their urban tribe or their you know, close ties. But actually, what the people who end up being the most transformative in their 20-something years are the people that they know least well. These are going to be the people that lead to that first job or that new idea, or that we end up starting a business with, or that we end up partnering with. That's where the new information comes from.
Is there a point when exploration, the gap year, or as we call it in New Zealand, the overseas experience, taking a year off from study or work to go travel the world, is there a danger that becomes procrastination?
You know, I think too much of anything is probably too much. But, you know, what researchers have found is that a mix of exploration and commitment is really what you want. That, you know, I'll be the first person to say, of course, there's value in a gap year. Depends on what you do, probably. But to get out and explore is part of what you get to do in your 20s that help you make better decisions about self and work and love. But what also has to go with that is some sort of commitment, where maybe you commit to something in particular for a year that, you know, leads to that identity capital, or that you can really dig in on and learn from. And so I think exploration for the sake of exploration year after year probably does lead into procrastination a bit. So it's really balancing that with making sure you're getting something out of those explorations, and that's really adding value to who you are and enriching your path ahead.
So whatever you do, just make it count, right?
Absolutely, exactly.
What a great book and a great interview. The Defining Decade, Why Your 20s Matter and How to Make the Most of Them Now. I've been speaking with Dr. Meg Jay. Really enjoyed it. Thank you, Meg.
Oh, my pleasure.